The dirt road that ran along the rail embankment was a poor surface for the outlaw motorcycle, which wasn't exactly a cross-country bike to begin with. Every rut and bump transmitted itself like an iron-shod kick right up through Ryan's butt and jolting up his spine. The big bike Ryan had borrowed from the Coldheart was running on fumes. Regardless, Ryan crowded it as hard as he could, gambling on speed. The brutal jouncing the road gave him was actually a help. It helped him keep himself in the moment. He had clamped his mind down as tight as his prodigious will could force it. He dared not think about the future. The past, as always, was just a spent shell case. He had plenty to worry about, and he let himself. Paul told him Christy had determined to get herself aboard the armored train. To Ryan, that meant she had, even though the dreams Farwalker had guided him through faded into impenetrable fog right around Taos. He took for granted she was capable of anything. The fact she'd caught the rad-blasted train, notwithstanding the fortuitous aid of a mad genius and rail ghost, proved that. Not that she hadn't already proved it to Ryan many times over. But even as good and smart and tough and fearless as she was, his mind could shape no image of how she might wind up anyway but caught or dead, or both, once inside the monster's metal gut. It was no different than letting yourself be swallowed by a giant beast. So he didn't try to imagine what was happening. Instead, he tried not to. Of one thing he was locked down sure, time was blood. Then he rounded a bend to see the great train a quarter mile ahead. Its trail engine was just passing the remnants of the derailment and its aftermath. Shortly beyond that point, the stream ducked under the tracks from right to left. Right after that, the line curved right, west, around a forest-crowned promontory. The lead engine was already out of sight. Ryan leaned into the high handlebars and twisted the throttle higher. He hadn't dared give the bike more than about two-thirds for fear of the machine shaking itself, not to mention him, to pieces. But he reckoned it and he could hold together long enough from here. Nearly 1,000 feet of wags lay in the stream, damming it, with the water swelling up around. A tumble, senseless and forlorn, as if a giant child had fetched his toy train a cosmic kick. 1,000 feet of wealth, beyond a baron's dreams of avarice, had been discarded without thought, as if to prove its former owner was, even without it, in many ways, still the most powerful man on Earth. Bouncing a yard in the air with what seemed like every bump in the track, Ryan raced in pursuit of Magog. Some of the wrecked wags zigzagged along the embankment with one end in the stream. Before he reached them, Ryan stopped, turned to face the bank directly, and charged right up it. The bike made heavy going. He had to push with his legs for all he was worth to get it the last few feet up and over. There was just space between the ends of the ties and the edge of the embankment for him to herd the bike along. He went full out across the trestle over the stream. At least the ride was smoother up here. The rear of the train was being sucked toward the bend. Ryan faced a snap decision as tough as green wood, how to get inside. The cars would be locked tight as a matter of course. He had, however, noticed what looked like little metal boxes on top of some of the armored carriages, with heads and heavy weapons sticking out of them. Since even a man as ruthless and profligate as the General would hardly be willing to combat the loss of his sec men, not to mention the big blasters that happened to be topside when a chemstorm hit, it stood to reason those emplacements had to be connected to the interior. He slanted the bike down the flank of the embankment and charged up the jut of mountain around the base of which the tracks flowed. The slope was gentler than the railway bank, but he had some bad moments toward the top when his rear tire started to spin out on a bed of fallen pine needle tripods, long, slender, and slick. Sheer brutal acceleration dug the tire through the needle layer and propelled him forward by plowing at the brown earth beneath. At the top, he saw he was in luck. The jut he had just ridden up formed the base of a huge backward L. The leg stretched off west, almost paralleling the track for several hundred yards. One thing Ryan knew was if he'd watched it all. However Christy managed to get herself in, she hadn't hesitated. He could do no less. Leaning forward, as flat to the tank as the bars would let him get, he charged down the leg of the L. His engine whined in protest as he ran up the gears. Cars began whipping past to his left. Men in open emplacements, hearing the mad mosquito whine of his engine, shouted and pointed at him. He heard shots. The promontory ran right up almost to the tracks before dropping steeply to the valley floor. Ryan and the bike went straight off the end. Hanging there with nothing but 50 feet of air between him and spectacular demise, Ryan had for the first time the leisure to wonder if this was a good idea. The answer was probably no, but he couldn't exactly turn back. All he could do was rely on his one-eyed aim, steel muscles, and tungsten nerves. And luck. Luck and a trick of aerodynamics almost finished him then. His aim was dead on. He saw the flattened, shiny metal top of an armored carriage rushing up at his front tire. But inevitably, he wasn't traveling fully parallel to the track. He was crossing at a very shallow angle. But as the bike descended, it suddenly started to go crosswise to its line of flight. A guy stood flat-footed on top of the wagon, shooting at him with his long blaster set to full auto.
Oh, shit!
Ryan managed to catch hold of an armored vent and arrest his progress as his boot heel shot out over open space, at the cost of the Steyr's butt fetching him a whack in the kidneys.
Shit!
He hung there a moment, taking rapid stock of his situation, while his body tried to remember how to breathe. Two cars ahead, a man's head stared back at him, immobile, like a startled gopher. Three cars back, however, two AlertSec men were bodily picking up a tripod-mounted M2 machine gun and turning it to bear on the intruder. Ryan hauled himself to a kneeling position. Without time to sling up properly, he braced, laid the crosshairs on a camo-clad chest, and squeezed off. The wag swayed slightly as the firing pin popped the cap on the cartridge. It threw the blaster's long barrel up a few seconds of arc. The bullet missed the target, but not the man. The bow-tailed slug hit right on the side of his chin, tearing his lower jaw straight out of his face. Screaming a fountain of blood, he toppled from the emplacement and rolled across the roof, leaving a wide scarlet smear. By that time, Ryan had jacked the bolt and gotten the rifle online again. The second sec man had gone into hero mode and just sat down spraddle-legged behind the 50 caliber weapon. His thumbs were reaching for the butterfly trigger when a 180 grain bullet punched through the seam of his blouse half an inch above the second button. He just sort of slumped down with his head dropping to his chest as if he'd just fallen asleep. Ryan spun 180 and whipped off a shot without bothering with the sight picture. It was intended to make whoever was in the emplacement, two cars up, duck if they were up to anything sneaky. It did. The bullet whacked the emplacement's armor wall and whined away. Ryan saw neither head nor blaster barrel. He jumped up and ran, hunched forward to streamline himself so the slipstream wouldn't pitch him off the train. As he did, he slung the Steyr and drew his Sig Sauer. It was far better suited for close quarters work than the long scope rifle. He leapt the gap between cars. It wasn't that far, not even hard for a man in his shape. It was still something better not to think about. There was utter chaos behind him. Ryan didn't hear the supersonic crack of any near misses. Still, they inspired Ryan to pick up his speed. The last thing he wanted to stake his life on was some trigger-happy soldier wannabe's blaster-handling skills. He jumped the next gap to the next car with an open emplacement. As he did, a head poked up. The eyes in it got very wide. Ryan snapped off two quick shots. The head snapped back, and a spray of blood and a chunk of skull shot out behind it. The head went away, to be replaced at once by a hand holding a long blaster, and spraying the roof blindly with bullets.
Fire blast!
Ryan launched himself in a flat dive, slid forward alongside the steel alloy box without picking up any new orifices along the way. He grabbed the top of the wall, hauled himself up, and pumped two shots into the back of the guy, crouched down, firing over the parapet. Movement caught the corner of his eye. Ryan jerked back. Something spread out and massive clanged against the edge of the raised emplacement where his head had just been. A sec man had just tried to brain him with the tripod of an M2, while trying to get it swung around to shoot along the train instead of away from it. Ryan swiveled his hip and kicked the third sec man in his close-cropped head as the man struggled to chamber the tripod for another whack. The man fell back against the far wall, dropping the metal stand. Unfortunately, it missed him on the way down. Dropping in after it, Ryan didn't. He punched the man in the face with his left fist, knocking his head back against the armor plate. Then he shot the sec man in the left temple with the muzzle so close, the flash instantly scorched away the short hair and quick-cooked the skin around the entrance wound. Ryan rooted quickly through the turret. If this were his rail wag, and enterprising Coldhearts could escape the traverse of his heavy blasters by getting in really close and swarming up the sides of the cars, he'd have...
Yep. Friends.
A crate with a dozen or so stashed inside for easy dropping on Coldheart heads. Little steel baseballs whose explosive hearts were wound round and round with yards of wire, meant to shatter into hundreds of nasty little high-speed projectiles on detonation. He tumbled a half dozen or so into his pockets, then pulled the pin on another and yanked open the hatch in the floor. A startled face was peering right up after him.
What? Surprise!
Ryan dropped the Gren on the bridge of the Sekhman's nose. Man and Gren dropped to the bottom of the compartment. Ryan leaned away. Sig Sauer in hand, Ryan dropped to the compartment floor. He almost landed on the headless guy. The other occupant of the wag, at least the upper story, was thrashing around in his own entrails. It looked as if he'd unaccountably tried to wrap himself in a 20-foot string of greasy purple sausages and doused himself in blood. Ryan quieted him with a hammer. Two fast shots to the head. A 9mm Car 4 lay on the rubber runner that covered the metal decking. It had a little blood on the stock and receiver. Short and handy and fully automatic, it was even better suited for face-to-face combat than the Sig Sauer. Ryan tucked away the Sig Sauer and picked up the carbine. He worked the charging handle. A cartridge spun away. He caught the yellow gleam of a fresh one going in. Golden. He pulled a spare magazine from the dead man's pocket. Pulling a Gren from his pocket, he moved toward the front of the wag. Ryan had some high-speed house cleaning to do.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
Remember when you could go to a movie for $3.50? Graphic Audio is a movie in your mind, and it can cost as little as $1.70 an hour. For what listeners, authors, and critics are saying is the most sensational entertainment of its kind. There's nothing else like it. Call 1-800-670-5220 or log on to our website at www.cuttingaudio.com. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the container of this Graphic Audio book. If you're on the road for months at a time and want your order to be sent to an oil desk at a truck stop on your route, just let us know, and we'll be glad to ship it there for you. Call 1-800-670-5220. See what's playing in your imagination.